Hi guys, Barry here, just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with our guest Rob Mulholland about, wait for it, the world's worst musicals. I am so excited. A little few bits and pieces, a bit of housekeeping. As ever, you can find out more about the podcast on the various social media spots. We're on Twitter, at Worst Foot. Ben is on at Ben Vandeveld, and I'm on at BazMaxStay. You can also visit our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com. Or send an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you have any, you know, notes or queries. And you can find us on Facebook as well. One of the things that a few of you have been doing lately is visiting our Patreon page, where you can donate and help support the podcast to grow. We have two new Patreon donors in the last couple of days. Thank you to Megan Mitchell for donating a few quid each month, and to Charlie Ludvigson, excellent name, Charlie, who has donated $5 a month and will be suggesting a topic for an upcoming episode. Thank you both very much, and as ever, to all of our Patreon donors. And if you want to go on there and check out the various different rewards you could get for helping support our work, and indeed the various targets we've set ourselves when we reach certain numbers of donors, then visit patreon.com/worstfootforward. Also, we were delighted to see a couple of days ago, and thank you to pod guest Keir Shields for pointing this out, that an old friend of the show made an appearance on telly. The excellent BBC series QI had a mention this week for Dr. Goatballs himself, John Brinkley. QI's Q series episode 4 about queasy quacks talked all about Dr. Brinkley putting goat testicles into men's scrotums instead of, you know, actually treating them medically. If you are able to watch QI in whatever region of the world you're in, have a look out for that. And it's nice to see him getting the recognition he truly, truly deserves at long last. Finally, before you listen to this episode, people who listened to the intro that Ben recorded for last week's episode may remember that he recorded it in the aftermath of a rugby match in which my beloved Ireland team lost to Japan. And Ben put it out there as a little bit of gentle ribbing at my expense, of course, forgetting that I would be doing the intro to this episode, an episode in which, on top of the demeaning of my national rugby team, he also lays into the musical Les Miserables, which nobody does. So I just really want the record to show that Ben's beloved football team, Newcastle United, have not won any domestic silverware since 1955 and counting. And, you know, in the spirit of Worst Foot Forward, I have actually done a bit of research around the topic and learned several things that have happened since 1955. For example, the Cold War was just beginning. We had the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Civil Rights Movement, the entire Northern Ireland Troubles. Nelson Mandela was out and then in and then out of prison again, elected President of South Africa, won a Nobel Prize, retired and died. We had a couple of Iraq wars. We had 9/11. We've had all 64 editions of the Eurovision Song Contest and the lifespan of Steve Jobs. Humanity had not even been to space. We have since then had time to put man on the moon and get round to cancelling the space shuttle programme. John F. Kennedy was still just a senator from Massachusetts in 1955. The Queen still only had two children, and one of her children's future wives, Diana Spencer, was still 6 years away from being born. We had the career of the Beatles, the career of Cliff Richard, the careers of Daphne and Celeste. We invented computers, video games, the internet, television moved wisely from black and white to colour, and fuck me, we even had time to put up and take down a Berlin Wall. The song Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White by Perez Prado was the number one song in the UK at the time of Newcastle's FA Cup win. And if you want to know how imaginative UK record buying was that year, a different version of the same fucking track went to number one a mere month later. Even Newcastle United's rivals Sunderland have won the FA Cup more recently than Newcastle in 1973. And the sweetest thing of all, a mere 4 months after Newcastle United last won domestic silverware, and I remind you that was in 1955, Ben's favourite comedian of all time, Brendan O'Carroll, creator of his beloved Mrs. Brown's Boys, was born. And so, in lieu of his football team winning literally anything for the last, you know, 60 plus years, at least he has the wit and wisdom of Mrs. Brown as his perpetual sucker. And perpetual sucker is definitely my new nickname for Ben. So enjoy listening to this week's episode of Worst Foot coming up shortly, and enjoy listening to what presumably will be Ben's riposte in what is going to be, I imagine, a long-running beef next week. But surely not as long-running as Newcastle's continued silverware drought. Ta-ta!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find me off Broadway. In fact, I'm so far off Broadway, I'm in Vermont. Still, the show must go on, so I'm using a row of squirrel corpses, which I've tied together with vines and dowling, to use as marionettes and make my own roadkill chorus line. And what could be more uplifting to the spirits of our woodland audience than 20 dead tree rats tapping their way through Can You Hear the People Sing? If that's a hit with the reviewers, then we'll be back with an all groundhog version of Starlight Express and some grizzly bears in kimonos performing Miss Saigon. And if you think those are pretty far-fetched ideas for musicals, then believe you me, we're just getting started. Once one of those are a hit, I'll be getting on the blower to Cameron McIntosh with my plans for a Scottish version of Hamilton, as performed by Hamilton Academicals Football Club, a Bollywood version of The Book of Mormon, and a one-man version of Cats, performed by Snoop Dogg. And with me is the box office hit to my spoonful of box office smack, Barry McStay.
When you mentioned that you were doing an old Groundhog version of Starlight Express, I remember that there has been a musical version of Groundhog Day, and I want to see the all train version of Groundhog Day.
And there must have been a musical of Cars as well.
Not yet, or else there was that typo when they were producing Cats that time. But Cars is the worst Pixar movie, by the way.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that episode.
Yeah, that was. It's unfair on Cars because it's like all other Pixar movies, yeah. And then Cars.
Yeah, it's very much a category all of its own. I am so excited we're doing this episode.
Yeah.
We were saying just before we started recording, we made a list of pot topics we wanted to cover on the podcast way back in 2016.
Yep.
You know, before Trump and everything else. We had World's Worst Musical as one of the first 10 or 15 topics.
This feels like the reason why you were put on this earth, Barry McStay.
Oh, I cannot begin to tell you. The very first musical I saw was Phantom of the Opera. And I know it gets a bad rep, but it genuinely changed my worldview and probably helped me become more gay.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what the first musical I saw was the Buddy Holly story.
You saw Buddy?
I said, Buddy's a great musical. I'm not hearing a word against it.
No, it's great. You know, it's good. I love Buddy. I hate that it is the pathogen which has spawned Mamma Mia and We Will Rock You. That's a jukebox musical.
It is a jukebox musical. Well, the thing is, I saw that and then my dad then took me home and opened up this little box of singles and he showed me all his original Buddy Holly 45s and I was like, I can't wait till you die. My dad told me about my dad was at boarding school in the 50s and he was in the Jewish house because they liked ghettos in the boarding school. And it was, he said it was 1959, him and his mates were in the medical wing because they all had German measles. The worst thing for Jews. it was Yom Kippur, so they were starving, they were ill. He turned on the radio and he heard the news that Buddy Holly had just died in a plane crash.
Jesus Christ.
He was like, this is the worst day in my life.
It was Don McLean in the class with him.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what the worst musical I've seen is. I saw Les Mis and it's absolute horse shit.
I'm going to throw you out this fucking window right now.
I'll save annoying you for later because most major musicals I hate.
I feel like this is going to be the flip side of when we did World's Worst Beatles song.
Yeah.
Anyway, our guest this week is a sculptor and environmental artist based in the UK whose practice explores the complex relationship between humans and the natural world and whose sculptures push the boundaries of physical structural engineering. Oh, actually, no, hang on. Our real guest does share a name, but with worse search engine optimization with that sculptor. And in fairness, given he is 6'7" and bearded, he could easily be mistaken for the Christ the Redeemer statue if he stood in Rio de Janeiro talking about the size of the fish he just caught. A regular on the comedy circuit in the UK, described as a bombastic, mischievous, gag-slinging rascal with a heart full of gold and a gob full of shite. He's also a writer for Mock the Week and a host of the podcast Rob Mulholland Has an Opinion, which is conveniently and appropriately also his name. So please welcome Hassan Opinion. Rob Mulholland.
Hello. Hello, good to have you here. Yeah, Rob Mulholland, the sculptor, is fucking killing me on Google. Yeah.
Literally the first two is him.
Yeah, I know. It's only recently I've got that far up. It's been a while. Like, he's always been way ahead of me. He's very good, and he gets commissioned a lot. And so for ages, I was like, this bastard, and we had a little war where we were signing up all the social media accounts. I got the Twitter handle and the Instagram, but he's got the Facebook / Rob Mulholland.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So, I had this in my head little rivalry with him until, I can't remember what happened. I followed him on Instagram, I think, because, his sculptures are good.
Yeah.
And then he messaged me and, hey, I've seen your comedy when I've been Googling myself. And we had just had a little chat, and he's dead nice.
Lovely.
He's a really lovely bloke, so...
You should get him and ask him if you can model for him.
Well, he just does sort of silhouettes of people, these mirrors.
They're
stuff.
Really cool.
I have seen
them in person.
Yeah, they're great. And, so big up Rob Mulholland. He's a sound guy. He's going to come to a show sometime when I'm up near him in Scotland.
That's brilliant.
Wow. We should do World's Worst Sculpture and get him on the show.
That's a brilliant idea.
Or do World's Worst Sculpture and keep you on the show, right?
Or alternatively, we could do World's Worst Rob Mulholland. And I'd
Because
I'm
going to fucking lose, aren't I? Yeah, but that's it. For a while he's been in touch. And I get tweets for him sometimes.
Nice.
And I get tagged in things. And I stopped doing it now that we've got in touch. But before I had spoken to him, I would reply with horrible things. It amused me. Someone once said, oh, I love this sculpture, blah, 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 I think it works amazing. And I replied, thanks, it was inspired by FGM.
So you're the guy who gets tweeted by John Lewis fans.
Yeah.
Or
on a much more minor scale, I get one every 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Or Tony Hawk's the comedian responds to all of Tony Hawk the skateboarder fan emails and stuff that he gets.
Well, it's that his famous book of his, Round Island with a Fridge on a Skateboard.
Yeah. Rob, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Obviously, you're very good at being tall.
Yes.
What would you say you're not so
good at? Can I just point out, very good at being tall? Is it possible to be very bad at being tall?
Yeah, you, Ben.
That's not...
Some people don't carry it well.
Yeah, I think.
I look vaguely in proportion. I don't think it's too weird.
Yeah, and you don't bend down too much. So
no,
you don't ruin
No, I stand with shoulders back. I've read a lot of Jordan Peterson. I haven't fucking don't fucking
if
write
the BFG
me.
Had read some Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, I've been red pilled. Is that the right colour? I can always forget. Anyway, this actually ties in very well what you're saying, Tony Hawk's, because the thing I am worst at is skateboarding.
Oh really?
Yeah, genuinely. When I was a young lad, when I was 13, I got really into skateboarding from the Tony Hawk's games. Mm. And,
were you tall even at 13?
Yeah. Mm. I've always been proper lanky, and I've filled out a bit in the last few years. I was so skinny and tall. I was 6'5" when I was 14.
Ooh.
So it was never going to be the sport for me.
Yeah.
But bless little me, I really wanted it, and I really went out every night with my mates, and I'd try. And I was just so shit. I would just fall off all the time. My centre of gravity is so high.
That is the problem. Could you not, being 6'5", could you not have kind of sort of those uniforms that the winged uniforms that parachutists have?
Oh yeah,
that you stand in it and hold your arms out, and then you take the currents and use yourself as your own sail.
I don't
use
think that's going to help on a skateboard. If anything, that might hold you back. And to be fair, I was wearing a Red Hot Chili Peppers hoodie that was 4 times too big, so I think I was sound effect. To be fair, very baggy mosher jeans from the 90s, just a wallet chain flying behind me.
I want to watch an X Games where you and Ben, who is terrible at riding bikes, have to compete against each other.
I'm just very bad at it, and I'm also I was also too scared of it as well. I didn't have the I didn't have that jackass gene where I don't care. So I'd be like this is gonna really hurt, and then I'd be right.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than being in hospital and thinking vindicated.
Yeah. There's something very cruel about the fact that skate parks are made of concrete as well rather than rubber.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't really roll on rubber. That's the problem.
Yeah, they need that sort of resiny, softer stuff you get in playgrounds nowadays. But that's not cool. You need to get the scars.
And you can't bounce on. You can't roll on that.
Yeah.
You need it hard.
You've not got a very bouncy physique either.
No, I'm all elbow.
Yes. Yeah.
Stabby rather than bouncy.
Yeah, totally. I did see a guy at skate park when I went once. He was on rollerblades. He did a backflip and landed with his shin bone on the coping.
Oh no!
And it just popped out. It just popped out of his leg. Oh. And that was the end of me trying to go on that ramp for the day. I was watching him do that. I was like, nah.
That boy went on to star in Starlight Express.
I was getting a list of a variety of your attributes, Rob, but I'm just going to say, if you looked at a photograph of Rob and said, what is he really into, you wouldn't think musicals.
Yeah. Serial killer documentaries.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, you'd be right. I really hate most musicals. Yeah. Like, I'm not a fan. But, like, what I've brought for you today, I'm a fan of. They are the worst musicals.
Well, we will see.
I'm very confident.
Yeah,
I'm very confident.
I enjoy a guest turning up thinking, I have absolutely got the trump card.
This is going out the fucking park.
What, out the skate park on a stretcher? Right, but we're going to start with Barry. What have you got, pal?
Cool. I read a bit about some musicals in general before I get to some really bad ones. Do you know what the world's longest running musical is?
It's The Mousetrap.
That's a play.
I know.
God, I don't know if you're just trying to piss me off already.
Yeah, I did not know that.
It's Les Mis, isn't it?
No, it isn't. Les Mis is known for being the longest running West End
show. Is it Spice World the Musical?
We're going to come to Viva Forever soon. No, Les Mis is famously the most longest running musical in people's imaginations. It ran for 13,964 performances, the original West End production.
Jesus.
It just closed in July.
I thought The Fringe was bad.
It just closed in July because they're renovating the theatre and they're downsizing the production a bit. And then the next longest run is Phantom's been running for nearly as many performances, and it's the longest running one on Broadway. It's still running. But there's this musical called The Fantastics, which ran from 1960 till 2002 for 42 years off Broadway, which is why people don't think of it.
I just feel like The Fantastics is the sort of musical theatre equivalent of the Aristocrats.
The plot of it's fucking bonkers. It concerns two neighbouring fathers who trick their children, Louisa and Matt, into falling in love pretending to feud.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Sort of the opposite of The Parent Trap.
Yes.
Romantic version of the Beverly Hillbillies.
It's really not great. There's
They're basically trying to make their kids fuck.
Yeah. Like,
am I hearing this right?
There's a song in it about rape. Rape in the classical sense of abduction, but it just mentions the word rape quite a lot, and it's very uncomfortable.
I mean, to be fair to them, it rhymes with a lot.
It does.
Got into a scrape. It was just a bit of rape. That sort of thing.
I'm clipping that and using that as a ringtone.
Quoting from the lyrics by Tom Jones.
Wow.
By Tom Jones?
It's a guy called Tom Jones.
Is it the Tom
it's
Jones?
Sadly not.
It's just a bit of rape. It's not consensual.
Despite it running for 42 years off-Broadway, it only ran in London in its first performances for 44 performances in 1961. And then it opened again in 2010 and closed 3 weeks into a four-month run.
And so, this is why Britain is better than America. We don't stand for that sort of shit.
Yeah, they've gotten over it a bit.
I'm assuming this ran in for 42 years in Alabama.
No, it was not.
Where it was a wholesome family. Yeah.
No, it was in New York, an off-Broadway
unreal.
Theater. Yeah.
Unreal.
I also looked at short-running musicals that still won Tony Awards.
Right.
Oh, that's super niche.
So there's a show called Carnival in Flanders, which ran for only six performances in 1953.
I think that's how in The Simpsons Mrs. Flanders describes an orgasm.
They had alarm bells very early on. The production replaced its original director and a number of book writers, opened negative reviews, and closed just six performances later. However, Dolores Gray, who was the lead role in it, did win Best Performance by a Leading Actress.
Good PR.
Yeah.
That's definitely PR, though.
It's one of those things where people come along to see a movie in case it's a car crash, I guess.
Yeah, to be honest, like 50% of the shows I go see at the Edinburgh Festival are that.
You just want to see what's bad.
Oh, yeah, every year I try and go to the worst show of the festival. Like, whatever, like, if someone gives me like a
it was lovely to see you in the audience.
If someone gives me like a black and white flyer that is one-sided and clearly just photocopied at home, I'm at that show.
I can imagine what would be most off-putting if you were in, I mean, you would probably be the audience, but if I'm doing a show that I know is a bit shonky, I want the audience to sit there bored and tired. But the thought of you, Rob, in the front row with a big vat of popcorn, just smiling all the way through, going, this is the best.
Feet up on the stage.
There's another show called Anyone Can Whistle. It's a Stephen Sondheim.
That's not true. Yeah. What about people with a cleft palate?
That's the subtitle. They couldn't fit it on the program. Anyone can whistle ran for 12 previews and 9 performances in 1964.
More previews than performances.
Yeah,
that's a rough ratio.
Oh, it's not a good look. However, the choreographer Herbert Ross got a Tony nomination, and it was Angela Lansbury's first stage musical role as well in that show.
And three people died.
Yeah. We're going to get to Spider-Man later on. And then I was like, oh, Angela Lansbury, big name in a flop musical. Who's found another really good one. A show called Darling of the Day, which ran for 31 performances. The book was uncredited when it opened on Broadway because 5 book writers had tried to make it work, and the last person who had just refused to have the name associated with it. They also went through 3 separate directors. And after the 31 performances, Patricia Routledge won Best Performance as a Leading Actress in the musical in the 1968 Tonys, despite it being a disaster of a show. Patricia Routledge, as in Hyacinth Bouquet.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And she also appeared in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which is the last score that Leonard Bernstein wrote for Broadway, with lyric and books by Alan Lerner. Yeah, that only ran for 13 previews and 7 performances. Another one of those.
Wow, the curse of Routledge.
The Routledge curse. The great thing is, This is a musical about the White House and its inhabitants from 1800 to 1900. He was so unhappy with it that Leonard Bernstein wouldn't let them record a cast recording of it. And all the reviewers were sort of universal in the condemnation, apart from talking about Patricia Routledge, because she had a second act showstopper song called Duet for One, The First Lady of the Land, for which she received a mid-show standing ovation on opening night.
Wow.
And a standing ovation from the orchestra on closing night. It's basically, it's her playing the two roles of both Ulysses Grant's wife and Rutherford B. Hayes' wife on the day of Hayes' inauguration. And she's doing both voices and doing costume changes and duetting with herself. And despite there not being a recording of the show, somebody bootleg recorded the opening night. So it is on YouTube. People can go and listen to Patricia Routledge absolutely smashing it out of the park. Nice. In this otherwise disastrous musical. And it includes the standing ovation in the middle of it as well.
Ah, she must have been a nightmare in that dressing room after that. Fucking swivel, lads. Yeah. So someone got a stand in now.
First you pull your fingers out.
Big Patricia smashing it.
P-Routes. I also read about, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. This is the ill-fated Bono and the Edge musical.
Oh, God, that's just...
Oh, yeah. Jesus. So we've got a Spider-Man musical by Bono and the Edge. Right, shall we shut this episode down? I've not heard of this. Yeah.
Whereas the fucking made-up Marvel superhero has got a more plausible name than the people who wrote the music.
Oh, yeah. And it was also... It was going to be directed and had a book by Julie Taymor, who directed The Lion King, and wanted to basically do links between the Spider-Man story and the myth of Arachne from ancient Greek mythology.
Oh, no!
And it was notorious for the number of injuries suffered by the cast.
While they're slinging around.
Exactly! Like, yeah. Genuinely, there were 6 different injuries during it. It had a budget of $75 million. Jesus. It lost $60 million. It did run eventually for 2.5 years.
Still lost $60 million.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Two stunt doubles were injured during flying sequences in rehearsals. Safety inspectors fined them. One of the injuries occurred when Spider-Man stunt double Kevin Oben broke both his wrists, which is, if you're shooting out the webs, you can't
awful
do
injury
it.
For Spider-Man.
I mean, I would love it if one of the injuries was just someone swinging on and going splat straight into the wall.
Honestly, I would pay good money to watch, like, you know, like the play that goes wrong, when they do like shit-faced Shakespeare.
Yeah,
do
that,
but with the dangerous Spider-Man music. That's one of the cast members hammered and just watched them slam into walls.
It probably explained why it sold like as well as it did for us.
Totally.
They should have put it on in a double bill with The Fly the musical.
And one of the actors fell more than 20 feet off a piece of scenery because his harness wasn't connected to the safety cord.
Oy.
He fell through.
I know, I mean, that's far from us. That's 3 steps.
Yeah. He still hurts.
Yeah. He fell through the stage and into the orchestra pit. Another actress was...
Elbow straight up the jacksie.
It set the record for the longest preview period in Broadway history, 182 preview performances before their official opening night in 2011.
Wow.
To the extent that critics just started reviewing the unfinished play. On the show because they were just sick of being told, no, you can't, it's still previews. You're like, you've been running for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Needless to say, Bono hasn't, I think, tried to write a musical since.
Yeah, if only he'd do the same with his music.
And maybe the most famous West End musical that went wrong is the Oscar Wilde musical.
I'm not aware of this. That is the gayest thing that could possibly exist. Yeah. It's gay squared.
You say that, but it was written by him. It was written by Mike Reed.
What? As in
TV and radio presenter Mike Reed.
We used to be on The Comedians.
That
Mike
sort
Reed.
Of
the impressionist.
Like,
yeah.
My wife. That yeah, sort my mother-in-law.
Who did? Was it Mike Reed, the guy who did the racist UKIP song?
Yep.
Yes,
that's him as well.
And he. So he's a fan of Wilde.
In 2005, he opened Oscar Wilde the musical on a Tuesday at the Shaw Theatre in London, and it was closed on the Wednesday.
Wow.
A spokesman for the theatre said, after the first night, bookings were low and the reviews were poor. That's putting it mildly. Apparently, there were only 5 tickets sold for the second night of the show.
Jesus.
It was time to coincide with the 150th anniversary of Oscar Wilde's birth and was due to run for several months. The role of Wilde was taken by an actor called Peter Blake, who had also appeared in a show called Money to Burn the previous year, which closed after 2 nights at Leicester Square.
What's Blakey up to nowadays?
Same thing he was doing last year.
Yeah,
with Fritta
Monge.
Yeah. quotes from the Elizabeth Manny in The Guardian said, the sound system is being affected by the hefty rumbling of Oscar Wilde turning in his grave. And the Daily Telegraph said it was hard to feel anything other than incredulous contempt. Reed passes golden genius through the filter of presumptuous mediocrity and produces over 2 hours of leaden dross.
Wow. Oh, that is a pasting. I've had some harsh reviews in my time, but that really...
That's up there with the reviews that Viva Forever, the Spice Girls musical, got a few years ago, where they got 5 one-star reviews from national papers, so they listed them on a poster with the stars posted vertically with the names of the papers beside them, so it looked like 1 5-star rather than 5 1-stars.
Yeah, I'm all about those dreams.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you my choice of the Wordsworth musical, which is... Leonardo the musical : A Portrait of Love.
Right, A Portrait of Love. I'm assuming this is the painter, not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Yes, yeah, it is very much the painter.
That's a musical that needs to happen.
Oh.
They've already got one banging number.
Yeah.
Leonardo the musical was a musical about a torrid love affair between Leonardo da Vinci and La Gioconda, aka the Mona Lisa. The storyline.
Did this happen?
No, this didn't happen.
No, the guy who wrote it very much says it draws on a creative license.
Right, sure.
He does.
And the worst bit is the lady playing the Mona Lisa. She didn't come out in the West Ham bubble hat and scarf, which is so rude.
It was written by a guy called Duke Minx and Tommy Muller. Now, more of them in a bit. Muller said, I came up with a sort of a plot that might well have been his life. You know, why wouldn't Da Vinci have had an affair with Mona Lisa? It's a bit of a love triangle, really, because she was betrothed to this sort of a bastard, this soldier who didn't treat her very well. That's kind of the plot.
Strong word for what that is.
Plot. Now, I'll give you a heads up. It closed after 5 weeks with an opening night running time of 4 hours, and most of the audience had left by the time the show finished.
Oh, Jesus, 4 hours is... Yeah, that's too much.
Let's go back to the genesis of it. The guy who was behind it was a guy called Duke Minx. And he
wasn't a jazz saxophonist.
He had been involved in music. He was a roadie for the one-hit wonder pop group Unit 4 Plus 2. Their song Concrete and Clay knocked the Rolling Stones off number one in 1965. And Muller, the guy who wrote with them, had been the lead singer of this band.
Right, but the Stones never got over that.
They've never lived it down. Duke Minx had been working during the 80s and 90s as a financial advisor for the nation of Nauru.
And how are the finances of Nauru?
At that time, had been okay. They'd make quite a lot of money from phosphate, essentially harvested from bird droppings.
Right, okay. So it was big in the bird shit business.
Yeah, absolutely. Up to their necks in it.
Yeah, then moved to the West End to do some dog shit.
Yeah. But by the 1990s, the resources were running out slightly in Nauru, so the government started looking for creative ways to generate new income. And you can see where this is going.
I follow.
Yeah. Minx was talking to this guy, Muller, and they came up with an idea for a musical. They met with the president of Nauru, Bernard Dowi Yogo, played him a few of the songs, and Nauru decided to fund the musical to the tune of about $7 million. Literally wow. Shit.
It's at this point you have to remember that this is real life and not the plot of a Mel Brooks film.
Yes.
Jesus, I mean, like, the Arts Council funds some absolute shit in this country. Oh. Like, they really waste a lot of money on bollocks, but, like, surely not $7 million. Although, I don't know, to be fair, the amount they spend on fucking opera. Sorry, that's another conversation.
It's an important bugbear. I sort of feel like we should, for next December Fringe, we should apply to the government of Nauru and see what we can get away with.
We could start a bidding war, go around like Nauru, Tuvalu, Vanuatu, get them to, you know,
all
up
the pointless
each other.
Top answers.
Yeah. So June 1993, the opening night is coming, and so 100 Nauruan dignitaries, including the president, are due to fly to London for the opening night, and they almost don't make it because people swarm the tarmac at the airport in Nauru trying to stop the plane leaving, protesting at this waste of money that they're involved in. They literally clinged to the airplane to stop it taking off.
Wow.
They eventually managed to take off. Police cleared the runway. They flew to the Black Tie premiere. They had a party at the Waldorf Hotel. The reviews were immensely scathing. It's one of the biggest flops in musical theatre history, and as I say, it lost millions, including the $7 million that the Nauruan government had sunk into it within a month. I couldn't even find any recordings of the show.
Wow, it's just
sadly
being shuffled under the carpet.
If you can't even find a bootleg clip of it somewhere on Daily Motion, did it even happen?
I'd like to hope that all of the sort of dance, the choreography was based on his Vitruvian Man picture.
Yeah,
there was just people doing star jumps behind him all
I
the
mean,
time.
Already, I'm pretty sure it won't have been, and this is a better show.
I'm going much more modern.
Yeah, right.
So we're in this millennium. There is a guy called Benjamin Till, right? And Benjamin is somewhat of an auteur. Now, I am submitting all of his work, right? His entire oeuvre.
Good word.
Thank you. Because it is three musicals, right? None of them are longer than 10 minutes, right?
Oh.
And they're all online. They're on YouTube. We can find these. These were commissioned by the BBC. Now, we need to bear that in mind. We all paid for these, right? This was public money, and these were broadcast on BBC One.
You sound like you're about to get a little bit Taxpayers Alliance on this.
No. Like, normally, I'm all for the BBC. In this case, they're fucking throwing some money up the wall. Right? His thing is he does musicals about sort of public institutions that are having like landmarks, okay. Essentially. So
this already sounds like Tommy Wiseau meets it's William Topaz McGonagall on a piano.
Yeah, we're talking that sort of level, right? They are, right, the ones I want to submit, right, so but there are three of them. They are Tyne and Wear Metro, the musical, right, Coventry Market, the musical, and Watford Gap, the musical.
Watford Gap Services? Or
Watford Gap Services. They are impossible to explain, right? Basically, right, anyone listening now, if you can, if you're in a position, just stop the recording,
yeah.
Go on YouTube, search for any of those. I would recommend maybe start with Tyne and Wear, mm-hmm. Right? It's Tyne and Wear Metro, the musical. Have a watch, have your mind fucking blown, and then come back to us.
Yeah. Just for our non-British listeners, by the way, Tyne and Wear Metro, is that like a public transport system?
Yeah, it's basically the tube, but in Newcastle. It's got two lines, one that goes to the coast and one that comes back.
Coventry was famously bombed during the war, so
exactly.
It's a horrible
that comes
city.
Up in the musical.
Yeah,
right.
It is. That is the only policy of the Nazis that I agree with.
And, Watford Gap
is motorway service station.
There we go.
That's literally all it is.
Yeah, it's like the last marker on the wave to the north from leaving London.
Fine.
Yeah, in football, there is often a thing of northern teams will sing, if you're from south of Watford Gap, you're a cunt.
Right.
It's used as a marker of where the cunts begin.
And they deliver it like Sir John Gielgud. Like, there.
Here we are from south of Watford Gap. Right, so basically, so what they do for these is they get volunteers from the community to be in it, right?
Great.
And so everyone in it is shit, right? Everyone in it is just normal people, right? And like, what I love about these is they are spectacularly crap because they're about such banal bollocks. So, like, the lyrics are just about the most boring things.
Yeah.
Everyone is terrible, but everyone's trying so hard, and I love that spirit.
Right? Yeah.
Everyone has come into this with such a beautiful spirit, and like, I really adore what they've done. It's just so crap.
Yeah.
And, like, unintentionally hilarious constantly. Like, constantly. You need to see this with the video as well, really,
yeah,
to fully get it. Like, people just constantly appear from out of shot in weird ways. People just pop up in weird outfits. Like, honestly, I kind of need to talk you through one of them, I think.
Let's do it.
Right, let's get the video up for Tyne and Wear Metro the Musical.
Please.
So I will...
You can now listen to your first ever director's commentary on Worst Foot Forward now.
Good lord, this is on the official BBC YouTube page.
Yep. And I hadn't watched them in ages until yesterday, and I was still I was crying laughing yesterday.
Spotting little nuggets of joy.
Honestly, it makes me laugh so hard.
What I love about this is that everyone has got the karaoke song that is their go-to, and yours is the most niche one ever.
Yeah. I genuinely know all of Coventry Market.
Listeners with stereo, I'm now on Ben's side of the microphone, so I can see this.
Right, so yeah, we'll just get a little bit of context.
On the 11th of August 1980, Metro trains started running in the northeast of England. This film is performed by people who use or work on the Tyne and Wear Metro.
We're at the seaside. We're in the bay. I think we're at
Whitley Bay.
No, I don't think it's quite Whitley Bay. I think it might be a harbour or some stuff. But we start with a northeastern armpit bagpiper. Right, it's just sort of bagpiping under his armpit. It doesn't blow into it. It's a weird northeastern thing. And honestly, right, he's meant to have like this stoic look of civic pride. He just looks like he's left the oven on. Right, honestly, have a watch. Firstly, the locations for this are fucking mental. Right? Every shot is in a different location. Some of them are just like a scrapyard that is on fire.
Yeah.
Right, now we've just got right. Now, I'm assuming this woman is Chinese because I'm racist.
Sure.
Right. She is singing in her own language. They try for diversity, but only in really small parts. So there'll be one bit in Coventry music, Market Musical, there's 20 seconds where they put every other ethnicity in and then go back to white people. I think this is the only non-white person who gets a major role in this.
All these people look very cold.
Yeah, well, it is the Northeast.
Yeah.
You know, it's clearly a very cold day when they're filming. There is a moment in a second where there. You're not going to expect who's going to pop up in a second, right?
Please tell me it's Alan Shearer.
It's no one you've ever seen before, but like, it's just really bizarre that like. So let's play on. She's just walking down a bridge, holding a big old weasel.
I mean, listen,
I love that they've come to that from someone singing about geometric lines.
This is it. Like, the lyrics are so weirdly, like, he's trying so hard to get the weird, like, depth and beauty into it, and just, it's a whiff every time.
Well, it doesn't scan have it. Like, no. I really like...
Oh, no, there's some outrageously bad scanning.
The first line of Stephen Ward, the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical set around the Profumo affair, is, "Stephen Ward, your friendly osteopath." Genuinely like that.
Wow. That's poor. I sort of feel like all the lyrics are meant to be about the speed and the precision of Newcastle's metro, which is the sort of lyrics you'd want Kraftwerk to write.
Yeah. Well, that hence the auto-tune, mate. Clearly being heavily inspired. Right, so let's crack back on, because we're about to get into some banging bits.
That's two young people singing in the foreground who duck.
Yeah.
And there's suddenly a guy behind them.
In a mirror, right?
It's in
one of those mirrors on a train station platform. It's just this old dude just like...
He reminds me of the bit in The Little Mermaid in Under the Sea when Sebastian sings and the about a fish being the Duke of Seoul, and it turns to the bit and goes, yeah.
This is it. Like, that's one of my favourite things about this is people coming in and out of shot.
Yeah,
right. Their entrances and exits are amazing.
We just had some people going up an escalator, but seeing them from the side.
Oh,
so they were like the gifts on the carousel in the Generation game.
I also love
the fact that they've clearly scrubbed every single train station.
Oh, totally.
It's beyond an inch of its life.
Oh, completely. They're singing about fucking escalators. It's a fucking escalator, and this is the level we're... And, like, we haven't even begun. 3:09, this bit starts. This is the rap.
Of course.
The rap.
Right, now, this is a rap. He is there rapping about how he's got a ticket so he won't get a £20 fine. Have you ever heard anything less gangster?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Ice Cube being like, yeah, I ain't gonna fair dodge?
I love that...
Okay, we want you to rap, but the essentials of the rap are is you need to list the destinations of this metro and also make people aware of the consequences of not buying tickets.
Exactly. Oh, they really hammer the not buying tickets thing. There's more coming. Right, let's have a little play. I know, we've now got like carnival dancers and also someone who looks like they might be in a Steps tribute band, SH.
Yeah. They're jugglers, they're buskers, random town crier in the middle of this train carriage.
Hold on to the town crier, we'll see him again in a minute. Right, but this is another feature of Till's work, right? Usually around this point... around this point in a musical, it will drop down so we can go for another big crescendo!
Because we're going to get a...
He loves a round as well.
We're going to get a Tynan Weir Metro.
Oh, you best believe it.
I'm not thrilled that several of them are very obviously reading the words from sheets in front of them.
Yeah, I know. Like, there's not that many words.
Yeah, I mean, but like, no one is in any of the other bits. Why couldn't you learn this bit?
I don't know.
Learn your lines, mate.
He is the anticipation, patient guy. Yeah. So he's clearly just been working on nailing that bit. His big solo. Right, have a little listen to the lyrics about this guy. So to explain, there's a woman walking along the platform singing wistfully. Now, a dude who looks like Matt Lucas in a suit and a yellow baseball cap is coming down an escalator towards her. Listen to these lyrics.
Right. I had a one-way ticket to the States, but she asked me on a date, so I went.
And it was great.
And it was great.
So I ripped up my ticket and stayed.
Wow.
He went on one date with a woman and cancelled moving to America in order to stay in Sunderland.
States, date and great is like rhyming 101.
Oh, it's really it's really bad. Here comes the town crier.
Looking like the honey monster who's just had some ginger shoved up his arse.
He just comes running off a train with his arms wide open.
Nearly knocks over three students, Skittles.
Yeah, three students who would be able to have wandered in from the set of Grange Hill in 1984.
There we go. Tynan Weir Metro, the musical.
That is
one of three.
Well, that's like one of the three triptychs of Hieronymus Bosch's Garden of Unearthly Delights.
Yeah.
It's certainly as much of a vision of hell.
Yeah, it's hell more hell.
Yeah.
So, like, it goes through so many movements.
Yeah.
Is what's incredible.
Yeah.
It
encapsulates so many different genres.
Yeah, and like, what I love about Benjamin Till is, he goes, everyone involved in this, including me, is fundamentally shit at everything. Should that mean that we keep things simple? No. His scale and his ambition, you've got to applaud, right? He really swings for the fences. I mean, he strikes out, but he swings for those fences.
It's sort of like, in terms of the casting, it's like a Geordie Ben-Hur. They've gathered in every single black and white Yahoo on the streets and throw them at a metro platform.
Because that has... I mean, it's got a sort of 80s synth.
You're missing
sort of
the bagpiping before the 80s synth.
80s synth.
So we have the 80s synth bit.
There's there's a bit of like caroling sort of stuff. Caroling.
We have operatic moments.
It's like dancey sort of samba sort of vibes.
Rap, poetry. Like, what isn't there in this? Like, it is genuinely incredible the amount they put in there.
I'm surprised Cameron McIntosh hasn't picked it up.
The writing is incredibly bad.
Yeah,
like, the rhymes are terrible and really crowbarred in, and this it just doesn't scan at all. And no one can sing it.
It's a crying shame that there isn't sort of like a failure. Just watching Lindisfarne in there, a little bit of Jimmy Nail.
I mean,
a Gaza rap is definitely missing. What I really want is to see Gaza and Raoul Moat doing a song together,
holding a piece of chicken.
Yeah.
Who directed the actual
So
video
it's Benjamin Till composed and directed it.
I was going to say, because how did they find someone who was as photographically impaired as he is musically impaired?
By making it the same guy. That's how. It's the same guy. But there is a bizarrely long list of credits. The amount of people who worked on this dog shit is genuinely incredible.
And nobody said, this must stop.
No, but I'm so glad they didn't. It has brought me so much pleasure. I've genuinely watched it hundreds of times. I love it.
The fact that it has several bits about dodging your ticket fares.
Oh, so many. They really hammer that message home, especially the fact that they try and make it in the
rappers shouldn't be taking the metro.
Exactly.
For a start.
It's not a very gangster mode of transport.
What happened to the limo?
You'll be rolling on the bus.
Can you give us any taste of the Coventry and the Watford Gap?
I will do, yeah.
Any highlights?
So, Coventry Market is probably the most accomplished, I'd say, because they keep it to like 4.5 minutes, so they keep it down a bit.
Accomplished now, meaning short.
Yeah, basically. Right, it opens up, again, like wistful opening. It's a guy sweeping the floor, middle-aged, bald bloke. He's singing about how like that no one's around, the only sound is the echoing of his feet, and he opens the door and it all kicks off.
Of course it does.
Now, the chorus, which is all the way through this, is Coventry Market, all kinds of everything, something for everyone, there's no comparison.
Oh.
And it's genuinely hit like that. It's comparison.
Oh no.
It's like, guys, this is the chorus. Do you want to have another try at that?
The vibe I'm getting from this is that Till has like interviewed lots of people and then composed a musical around what they've told him, but
yes.
Hasn't gone, oh no, that story's not interesting, I won't put that in.
Exactly, he's just crammed everything in. Now, I think, right, like, it's between Watford Gap and Tyne and Wear for my favourite one, I think. I think Watford Gap might be the real pinnacle, right?
What's so good about that?
To the extent that me and Tony Basnett, the guy who showed me this video, we have planned journeys on different routes to go to Watford Gap and record ourselves in the locations from it. Right. It's just because what I love about Watford Gap the musical is, service stations are the greyest, most banal, bleak, bland, personality-free places on earth.
Yeah.
So in order to try and do a 10-minute musical about one, it's incredible, right? So this one is... it starts with a lot of, like, scared old people singing about the old days. There's a bit where a woman is sat on a rock and she has a Hoover for no reason. There is a bit where they start singing about the Ministry of Transport. There's a bit where three women dressed in like sort of 1930s garb harmonise, and it's a place where you can get a cup of tea or pee, and that is my sexuality. three women harmonising about peeing, I am in. Right,
it's the new Two Girls One Cup.
Yeah,
Ben, am I remembering right? Did we talk in World's Worst Musical Film about Russian propaganda musicals?
Yes,
about like extolling the virtues of Russian tractors and agriculture
and
stuff.
This is the same
sort of vibe.
Singing about
the Department of Transport.
Yeah, it's insane, right? There is a theremin player in Watford Gap.
Yes.
Right, now imagine what the theremin player looks like. You're correct.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever came in your head, it's right. Right. He's that guy. Right. He's playing a theremin. There's a guy playing a cello who has a tiny hat on a big head. At one point, right, he's playing it at like the bit, you know, when you pull into a service station, there's that bit of the triangle of grass that separates the motorway from where you're going into the service station. He's sat on that playing a cello, and this lorry appears in the back of the shop. He's like, shit, shit, shit. Right. There's a bit where they start singing chips, sausages, baked beans, ass around.
No.
There's a bit where they list all the famous people who used to go to the cafe there, and they list them all, and they're all singing them way falsetto all over the place, and the final line in is Leo Sayer is a tiny man. They just cuss Leo Sayer for no reason. Right, there's a bit where it just stops and they just start telling ghost stories. Right, like, it's not even musical at this point. It's just, there's a bit of, like, spooky music. And there's a guy just going,
still back, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a guy just going, like, oh, yeah, we were driving down the motorway and we saw this wall and we drove straight through it. Out of nowhere, right, it kicks back in. We have another, like, kicking in bit. And then, right, out of nowhere, the music drops and... just a little coda about that guy's dead wife. He's there with his son, just singing about their dead mum in the middle of this.
And the fact that they can see
Mummy's
her star
from
above Watford Gap.
It has no reason to be in a musical about Watford Gap.
But the thing famously with stars, you can only see them from one exact
exactly right.
Can I just point out, Rob, that in one fell swoop, you have ruined my YouTube algorithm. Far more than me looking at, like, Bolivian snuff videos. It will never recover from this.
Mate, you are fucked, right? But, like, I love that so much. It's so inappropriate for this musical, right? It's unbelievable. And, like, honestly, right, if someone is considering doing a... if I die suddenly, if someone is considering doing a memorial that is this, just don't forget about me. I'd rather be forgotten than have this be my legacy.
Rob, be honest. All right. When you die,
a little bit if he wants us to get
Benjamin Till on the phone.
He's ex-directory now. He won't know our numbers.
So it'll be beautiful. We'll have that, and then we'll get the other Rob Mulholland to build a sculpture of you above your grave.
Yeah. Come at me with a worse musical than that shit. Like that. These the work of Benjamin Till are my entry for worst musical.
That is fantastic.
I'm
also
gonna...
best musical. They're also my favourite musical.
That's very much our vibe.
Yeah. I'm going to say that is the this podcast equivalent of Shane Warne's first ball to Mike Gatto. It is a virtually unplayable suggestion.
I've just gone to Benjamin Till's Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is he active on Twitter?
He has been.
Ah, shit. I didn't know this.
At the Benjamin Till.
Nice.
Composer and director, Peeps aficionado, as in Samuel Peeps.
Oh, yeah.
Punter, suffers from echolalia, writer of Brass, The London Requiem, Our Gay Wedding, The Musical, and Beyond the Fence. My favourite thing about his Twitter page, though, is there are two pictures of him. There's the little round picture and then, like, the banner picture. And in one of them, he's got a rather fetching Poirot moustache, and he doesn't have it in the other.
Lovely.
Guys, can I just ask that each and every one of you, after you listen to this podcast, go to Benjamin Till's Twitter page and follow him. And he is
Don't say why.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm following him now. I didn't even know this was a thing. Oh, amazing.
I've just discovered he's also written A1, The Road Musical.
Oh, fuck.
If that doesn't have constant refrains to all the sex shops down the A1.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ben, you'd quite like this. He composed The Busker Symphony, 4 short films for Channel 4. A 4-movement piece composed and performed by buskers past and present at various locations around London.
I did see him do one about Hampstead Heath once. I found that. It's just not quite as good as the other three.
Yeah.
That was clearly his low-budget first attempt.
And he also recorded all the bells mentioned in the nursery rhyme Oranges and Lemons, 200 bells in 17 London churches, and wrote a piece of music to feature them all playing in harmony alongside a choir of people who live or work in one of the areas around the churches. You know what he's done, though? Is he's really hit on of the how you get funded fun shit.
Yeah.
You go, okay, we're going to really like specify an area or a thing.
Make it a community thing. Yeah. I mean, like, look, I genuinely think these are great things. I'm really glad he's done them. I'm sure everyone who's involved with them loved doing it.
I've just read The London Requiem, which I mentioned, which is in his Twitter.
Sure, sure.
It's a setting of gravestone inscriptions, which he's found in cemeteries across London.
Fucking hell.
This man, do you know what it is? He's going to be like William Blake, like unheralded in his day, but in 100 to 150 years' time.
It was recorded in 2012 featuring the Balinescu Quartet. They're like a classical quartet. I think they play the theme music to University Challenge. And soloists including Matt Lucas.
No fucking way.
Who you mentioned earlier on, and Barbara Windsor.
Fucking hell.
Barbara Windsor also, side note, appeared in Twang, which was Lionel Bart's follow on to Oliver Twist,
which bankrupted him
so. Wow.
And drove him to drink,
yeah, or well, you know, checked in on him while he was drinking.
Yeah.
let's be fair. Ben,
well,
try top that.
Right, let's get through this as quickly as we can. First of all, 1988, alongside and helped by the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon, they brought Carrie the Musical to the British stage.
Oh,
this is
Christ.
Famously terrible. Isn't there, I think there is a book about musical flops, which is, I think, Carrie.
It's called Not Since Carrie.
Not Since Carrie, yeah.
It went about as wrong as a musical about a girl with telekinetic powers who rains blood on people can do.
Yeah.
Basically, the lead singer in this, who played Carrie, she regularly couldn't perform what she wanted to because her microphone kept malfunctioning because it was so clogged with fake blood.
That was like Jungler's Bristol.
Yeah. On another occasion, she was almost decapitated by an elaborate set piece, by a moving staircase.
Jesus.
But she did agree to stay on until a replacement member of cast should be found.
So the weird thing is, it had run in the UK and been okay, and then went to America and it was the disaster. Well, how many performances was it? 30 or something.
It was pulled after 16 previews and 5 performances.
Wow,
ratioed.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal. The RSC, you do mention, like, they did give us Les Mis and Matilda, so it's not like, only do Shakespeare and this was the one attempt at a musical. So they've had a lot of success with musicals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a 50% hit right there. Just, I'm just going to get this out of the way early doors. I hate, in no particular order, Les Mis, Starlight Express, Cats, Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, bullshit.
All absolute dog pops.
Sorry, I will fight anyone who takes down Les Mis, apart from Castle on a Cloud. I will concede Castle on a Cloud. But everything else about
Can you hear the people sing?
Yes,
is not
and
bad.
It's beautiful.
No, it's not beautiful.
I defy you to watch Colin Wilkinson singing Bring Him Home and not be moved.
I mean, you really underestimate how unfeeling I am.
Yeah, are you telling me that an arms crossed Yorkshireman is really that ideal?
Come at me, lad.
Yeah, Rob's there just going, unless it's One Man and His Dog the musical, I'm not interested.
Oh, if you show me a musical about an injured whippet, I'll be impressed. Yeah.
I mean, there was I Can't Sing, which was the X Factor musical.
Oh, Jesus.
Which did have a puppet dog in it.
Wow.
If you walk down Shaftesbury Avenue at the moment, you've got Les Mis, and then the Les Mis in concert, because, the theatre Les Mis is in is being refurbished, so that's not playing. But I'm just imagining Cameron McIntosh is dreaming of a day when all of Shaftesbury Avenue is just Les Mis from one end to the other. Like, the 10th anniversary cast, the 25th anniversary, the concert version, the stage reading version, the puppet version.
There's something like really upsetting about a movie, about a story that celebrates what essentially was the first socialist uprising making so much money.
Yeah.
It's been pretty lucrative. It was, it was slammed on opening night.
Good,
well.
They were right. Just terrible. Just like.
I'm gonna rip your eyes out.
Just. Empty saccharine
Tears and Empty Tables is another good song from the
Master of the House
is an excellent song.
That'll do.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Okay. Do you know what? It's not awful. It's 3 stars. It's 3 stars.
That's the most damning thing you could say. You're such a dickhead.
Thank you. Let's move on to something else. In 2005, after only 18 performances, Behind the Iron Mask closed.
Yes. Oh, so is this The Man in the Iron Mask, a musical?
Pretty much.
Fucking hell, because already The Man in the Iron Mask was the stupidest fucking film. You take the most beautiful man on earth, who is famed for his looks, and put him in an iron helmet for the whole film so no one can look at him.
That's true.
And brilliant. What, famously, what was The Man in the Iron Mask famous for being?
A man in an iron mask.
Yes, and after that?
A nobleman. Isn't that the thing that he's
and what has happened to him?
Oh, he was a prisoner?
Yeah, he was in prison. So he's famed for being in an iron mask in a prison. In this musical, the prison door kept accidentally swinging open and the iron mask kept falling off.
That's beautiful.
They've ended the Prisoner of Zenda. Yeah, same thing happened to him.
I used to...
By the way, the Prisoner of Zenda should have had a musical, which is the title track being Return to Zenda.
I used to collect from pound shops when I lived in southeast London. Right, pound shops would sell like Channel 5 erotic films on DVD, right, and I would collect them because they were so funny. There was one where they were set in a prison in the future, and there was a point where they were started kissing, and they leant up against the bars, and the cardboard tubes folded.
Oh, no.
And an extra had to come along and straighten it whilst I love stuff like that.
I love watching an extra or just a stagehand trying and failing to look invisible.
Yeah.
There's a great review from Lynn Gardner about Behind the Iron Mask. Not just a vanity project, but a calamity project.
Yeah. Lynn Gardner is a queen. She really liked my play.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say something.
A staff
really
critic
cruel.
Is only right.
Yeah.
Never.
I was going to try and be cruel, but it was very good.
Yeah.
It's a terrible musical, though. What else? Oh, yeah. This is what I found that is ridiculous. Soul Doctor. This is from 10 years ago. It's not what you're expecting it to be. It really isn't.
I'm expecting it to be very racially troubling.
That it is. it is based loosely on a 1960s era Hasidic rabbi who used a song to
get not what I was expecting.
That's not what I expected.
No, not the race I was expecting to be offended.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. They pop up. he conveys a message of peace and understanding using the music mostly of Nina Simone.
What? Hey, I put a spell on you.
I put a spell on you.
Spell in the sky, you know how I feel.
Yes. Shinnerman. So it's... It opens in 1960s Vienna, where Shlomo Carlebach is giving a concert, having returned to the city from the first time in decades. It then transitions back to Nazi-occupied Austria, where as a child he witnessed a Jewish man being murdered for singing in the street. So okay. Real sort of like heartwarming
stuff. Well,
that's
quite, stuff. You know, I can see that setting up a musical, like in the grand sort of scale of... Les Mis and not using the music of Nina Simone, to be honest.
It's a juxtaposition, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, what if we got, like, a Chinese banker to do the music of Barry White? It's just, they've rolled two dice and seen what's come up out of it.
Yeah, they've done what Channel 4 TV execs do when they're making TV programmes. They put nouns in two different boxes. Sex box! There we go, TV show.
So there's that one, and there's lots of music from, like, 1960s hippiedom. It's basically... a kosher version of Hair. You know, instead of Hair, it should really be called
just
ringlets.
Loads of circumcised dicks on show.
I mean, circumcision the musical is a thing that should happen. That'd be great, but it only ends after the first act. By the way, talking of Thing the musical, I was really tempted to suggest all of the Brexit the musical, Trump the musical.
I saw a lot of posters for them at Edinburgh this year. Like every single company who's done them could fuck right off into the
There is too much stuff at the Edinburgh Fringe. I think, first of all, Harry Potter the musical, Lord of the Rings musical, Game of Thrones the musical.
Basically, protected property the musical.
Slash current affair the musical.
All of that.
I have to say though, when I was in university, just the year we finished, some friends of mine took a musical to the Edinburgh Festival, which had a very good title. It was Obama Mia.
That's solid.
I bet the play was shit though. It was student musical at Edinburgh.
The play was a solid 3 stars. The title earned one of the stars.
Oh, so as good as Les Mis. In 1976,
it's like, you can come at me all you like. You're going to get a lot of hate from listeners, so that's fine. I can leave that to them.
Come at me. It's literally one of the worst things I've ever had to sit through.
Yeah, we're doing some real controversy on this.
Come at me, haters.
Watch out, you're going to get cancelled, guys. I give it 6 weeks before Ben's on Netflix with a special called Triggered.
I'll be hosting my own podcast called One Gay More.
Solid. 1976 in Canada, someone decided that what Hamlet really needed was more songs.
See, this is what fucks me up, right? This is another thing that students do at Edinburgh. They try and improve Shakespeare. Arrogant little cunt, you are 19. You are not improving Shakespeare that has survived for, 600 years? Nobbets.
Ambition.
Nobbets.
Yeah. It was called Kronborg 1582. Rockabye.
I think I drank a lot of that before I gave up the booze.
Kronborg
1582. Even though it's set in Elsinore.
They should have called it Hamleton.
Lovely work.
Thank you.
Have an extra star on that.
In a double bill with Obama Mia.
They actually, after it flopped in 1976, it went on for an 18-month run in Los Angeles in 1981 under a different title of Something Rockin' in Denmark, which is not bad.
That's a 3-star title.
I've seen that on an X-Tube.
It's one of their top lyrics was, "Good son, you return to France. Keep your divinity in your pants."
Wow.
But my favourite song in the entire thing, and there are songs titled things like "He Got It in the Ear," "Gentle Love," "Don't Unmask Your Beauty to the Moon," but my favourite is the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Boogie.
Wow.
Boogie or not boogie? That's the question.
Have the 4th star, then. Go on. But my suggestion for the world's worst musical takes us back to the West End, and it's a show called Murderous Instincts.
Yes!
This is ridiculous.
And the other ones haven't been.
That's a good one.
So this is it's a real vanity project. Right. It opened... so it was basically a salsa comedy murder mystery that went through...
Channel 4 execs back on the job again.
It sounds like something my mum would go to at the local community centre. I'm going down to the murder mystery salsa tonight. Just on after Zumba.
It went through 8 different directors, cost £2 million, and was the vanity project of a chap called Manny Fox and his wife Cinder. They sort of wrote the play together, and she was an heiress to the Firestone Tyre dynasty.
Yeah, and she was the wife. He was the producer, wasn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's never a good look when you're like, oh yeah, and the producer's wife is going to be, you know, the subject of this, or she's going to be, you know, get an assistant director credit. She's playing the leading role, whatever it is. It's
the lead actress Nicola McAuliffe said of it, "Words cannot express how I feel about these two people and the total contempt and lack of respect they've shown us.
Ooh.
The way I see it, Manny Fox has had the most expensive top of the range Hornby train set, and he put his foot right through it."
She called rehearsals a motorway pile-up.
Yeah.
Which I'd much rather see in Starlight Express than in this.
Should have stopped at Watford Gap.
My favourite thing about the sackings was the 8th director, a guy called Bob Colton, was sacked in front of the audience during a preview in Norwich.
Well, did they call him out on stage? Like, Bob, get out here!
Yeah, sacked!
You'd think after 4 or 5 directors would stop saying yes to it as well.
Yeah, but like, look, we work in the entertainment industry. Yeah. We know how fucking desperate it is. Yeah, like, there's always some cunt who'll take any shit job.
Well, yeah, that cunt was a chap called Michael Rooney, the son of Mickey Rooney.
Fucking hell.
He couldn't
get an emergency work permit to come over here to direct it, so instead he had to direct it down the end of a telephone line in Paris.
Just might not be able to fucking see it.
Yes.
What?
Oh my god.
So it was...
That's... Yeah. How many days?
It ran for, I think, 8 days. Wow. And we're going to give the last word to Lynn Gardner.
This is... Ugh.
Thoughts turn not to murder, but to suicide during this misbegotten musical. It is pure poison, although the last 10 minutes do offer a little emergency resuscitation for those of us who had considered ordering Kool-Aid and cyanide at the interval.
Wow.
Hour 3... Nominations for the world's worst musical are Barry's of Leonardo the Musical, a portrait of love between the bald-haired, big-bearded artist and his own muse. Rob's triptych of Mundane Metropolitan Glory by Benjamin Till, the Tynan-Weir Metro, Covent Garden Market and Watford Gap the Musicals. And mine of a Puerto Rican millionaire's vanity project, Murderous Instincts.
I mean, they're all good.
Gentlemen, we've put together 3 compelling arguments for wrapping up existence as we know it. There is absolutely no competition. I'm going to take mine out straight away because it was bad and Lynn Gardner had awful things to say about it, but it can't compete with your two. Before you turned up, Rob, I thought Barry was an absolute fucking shoo-in.
Yes.
Because of being a musical funded by seagull shit.
Yeah, yes. And the fact that the two of us had both read it and both wanted to put it forward as a suggestion.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Was how in lockstep we were.
I came with receipts, though. I've got video evidence.
Yeah.
Purely based on the amount of work you put into this, this deserves to win. But it's the sweet spot of this podcast of a car crash that I cannot take my eyes off.
Yeah. There's a loveliness to it as well. There's a genuine, like, I love the desire to make something great by people who just quite can't.
Yeah.
There's a real pure-heartedness to it that I genuinely admire, and I genuinely admire Benjamin Till for his spirit, just not his ability.
Yeah. It's someone took the spirit of Legs Akimbo in the League of Gentlemen and put it into a musical.
Yeah.
If we put on Worst Foot Forward the musical, we know who we're calling.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
I'm just seeing how many people I follow him. Quite a few.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Oh, is he going to be well connected?
Yes, yes. Someone's desperate for work, aren't they?
I really hope he's not with my agent now.
Before we go our separate ways, Rob, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Well, the best place to find me is my website. It's robcomedy.co.uk. I keep it nice and simple. No one can spell my surname. So it's robcomedy.co.uk. If you're looking at sculptures, you're on the wrong website.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Rob Mulholland. It's the same on Instagram, not on Facebook because that's a sculptor. But basically, on October the 6th, I think it is, a Sunday night, 7 o'clock, I'm releasing my new special, Too Big to Fail. putting it out straight on YouTube. I filmed it up at the Edinburgh Festival. I think it's dead funny. I think you'll enjoy it. So check that out. Yeah, you can watch it for free on my website, robcomedy.co.uk, or on YouTube, search for Rob Mulholland, Too Big to Fail.
Yeah, do that. I went to go see Rob's show, and I don't go to see many other comedians' shows at the Fringe because it's not what they're there for. but it was, yeah, it was really properly excellent. So do check that out. We are all off to see if we can do Blackpool Illuminations the musical. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.